there's a couple of different ways to look at planning from a respective maintainability and availability. In some factories, that you actually have a maintenance planner who aligns resources and equipment and parts with the teams that are actually executing the repair, the technicians or engineers, as they prepare for either preventative maintenance or corrective maintenance or some other scheme or variation of monitoring and inspecting your equipment in order for it to be maintained or kept in operating condition as often as possible. Now, there's another side to planning, which is on the design side, and it's what we do to enable the system to be repaired in one regard, and we'll go into more detail what we mean by that. So on that design side, there's a whole concept, and you shouldn't be surprised to hear a design for type activity, a design for maintainability. And that involves a great deal of different number of design characteristics, everything from an access panel or diagnostic capability or using common tools and common techniques. But all of those things are decided during the design process. And so the design for maintainability provides a set of guidelines, a set of tools, and a set of reviews that allow us to make sure that the design of the equipment itself enables the quick and efficient maintenance and restoration of the system back to operating conditions. Now, as part of that, we have to do a variety of different estimates and or measurements as we're doing the design. And one of those is to understand or estimate how much time the system is expected to not be operating, to not be ready to operate, that it's going to require either inspection time in preventative maintenance or corrective maintenance of some form. And generally, there's a specification for equipment as to that balance that we want between repair time, for example, and operating time. If you're running a factory and you have factory equipment, say filling bottles, you probably want that equipment to be operating as often as possible to have a high uptime and minimize the downtime. So that uptime-downtime ratio allows us then to estimate the availability, is how often out of the, say, the day of plant operations do we expect the equipment to be running. Now, we may expect 24 hours a day that it's working for us, but we also know that there are specific actions that we need to do in order for it to continue to operate. It could be something as simple as a lubrication, but that does take time, and oftentimes that's not, this equipment is not able to be, say, filling bottles while it's being lubricated or maintained. And then there's costs. In the planning side, we want to create a product that has the minimum amount of cost in order to operate the equipment. And one extreme is we spend absolutely nothing on it and it never breaks down. In that case, it's very, very reliable. But if we have to do maintenance of some sort, say lubrication or alignment type activities, or replacing components that wear out, say brake pads on my car, well, how much will that cost? Now, part of that cost is the nature of the materials and the equipment that we're replacing, but it's also how much time it takes. If we have to remove a bunch of the equipment in order to get to the part that gets replaced, that just adds time and complexity and the chance for further failures. So part of the planning is on making sure that the system is able to be maintained and also that it minimizes downtime, improves availability, and minimizes cost. So like design for reliability, design for maintainability brings another set of constraints into the design team. Now, I mentioned just briefly some of those requirements, and like setting a reliability goal or set of requirements fit different points in time for a piece of equipment or fleet of equipment. Availability is the common metric, or uptime, as it's in the common vernacular, I would say. Availability allows us to measure the proportion of time that a system is ready to be operated. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be operating, but it has to be available or ready to operate. So right now, I'm pretty sure that my car has got gas in it and the battery's charged, and if I walked out to start it, it would start. So we could call it available at the moment. But let's say I take it into the shop for an oil change. So for that period of time, say for that hour that it's getting the oil changed and it's up on the rack, the vehicle's not ready to be operated. We would have to finish the maintenance activity and put it back into service before we could take it off on the road again. So at that point, it's not available. It's down. And those are some generic definitions, and there's plenty of definitions in this section. Another part of this is that downtime is maintenance time. Now, it could be for inspections. It could be for, actually, we call it wrench time, is where a technician or a mechanic is actually opening the drain hole for my oil pan, is draining oil out and letting the oil drain, and then putting the seal back on or the cap back on and then filling oil again. While they're actively working on the equipment, that's one kind of maintenance time. But it also could be diagnostics, it could be inspection, it could be a variety of different things. And so oftentimes when we were talking about availability, we also then talk about, well, how much maintenance time or downtime is allowable and or preferred, or set it as a goal. For any given availability, there's an infinite number of ways to achieve that. We can make something that is very difficult to repair, but once it's repaired, it operates for a very long time, or that it is diagnosed and fixed very, very quickly, and it just has a lot of downing events. I worked with a company that was filling bottles, and the bottler, this piece of equipment, would stop, every 10 to 15 seconds, roughly. And it varied quite a bit, but it failed regularly. And so there was always an operator very nearby to clear jams, to reset sensors, to clean something, and very quickly was able to restore the equipment to operating. So the overall availability remained relatively high. Now, like reliability, we also are concerned with what's the environment? Where is this equipment being used? And we need to define that, because that bottling equipment was working on a factory floor and it had the various conditions and environmental concerns of being on a active, busy, noisy factory floor. Whereas my car has got a much broader range of environments that it should be working in. And so, like reliability, we also here define the environmental and use conditions for the equipment. Now, there's two other parts to this, and we're going to spend more time later talking about these. But part of availability in this overall process of executing repairs is, like that bottling equipment, it would stop. And there were probably 30 or 40 common ways that it would stop at different locations in the equipment, and for different reasons. Most of the time, they were very obvious, and there was a bottle out of whack. There was an obvious visual clue as to exactly where the problem was. So the diagnostics was very quick. Now, in some cases, it stopped, and there was nothing obviously wrong. And so a quick check of the equipment to tell us which sensor tripped the shutdown of the equipment would then focus the technician or the operator to go to the particular area and do a closer inspection. And in the rare case, when it was beyond the operator's capability, a repair technician would come in and would put the system into a repair diagnostic mode and gather more information as to why it stopped running. And you can think of this as when I take my car in for a checkup at the auto dealer or the auto shop, they often now, in modern cars, will connect it to a set of computers, essentially, which interrogate the car, looking for any diagnostic, running different diagnostics, looking for symptoms that need attention. The other part of these requirements may be what skill level, what kind of training or special tools are required to maintain and operate the equipment. And good practice is to keep it as common tools and common skill level, but that's not always possible. So you may have multiple tiers as to what kind of maintenance is done on a vehicle. Back when I was in the military, I was a private and I was assigned to drive a Jeep for my commanding officer. And I regularly had to do an inspection before we operated the Jeep. It was pretty much every day. And then once a week and once a month or so, there were different types of maintenance practices, mostly preventative maintenance, combination of inspections and lubrications and cleaning that we did. And then when something was noticed or on occasion, they were both scheduled and by inspection, a trained mechanic would have to do the repair process. And there was even a third level beyond that when it took special equipment or special skills, it would go to another shop that had that equipment and trained personnel for it to occur. So there were, I think, three or four different levels of maintenance activities. And the most common, the most frequent and easiest to accomplish is the ones that I did as the pretty much an unskilled mechanic operator of the vehicle. And so the requirements can take a much broader span than what we are commonly used for reliability, but they also incorporate both the reliability elements that we've talked about previously, plus the maintenance and all of the aspects that go into maintaining a piece of equipment. So I often wondered when I was in the military is who created these maintenance instructions. Did they understand that I didn't really know anything about vehicle maintenance? And I suspect they did because they had a lot of photos, and or not photos, but drawings and images in the maintenance instructions. They had images of where to stand with respect to the vehicle, what direction to look, and what I was looking for, the lubrication nubs that allowed me to hook up a grease gun and to lubricate the various parts of the vehicle. And it had, I think there were 14 different points that needed lubrication, and there were 14 different photos with directions as to exactly how to find them. And it went on like that for the entire manual. It was written not quite comic book style, but pretty close. But it allowed me, with no knowledge about a vehicle, to actually execute the basic level maintenance. Now, the higher level maintenance ones also had books that had very detailed instructions and lots of imagery in order for the maintenance teams to pretty efficiently learn how to maintain the equipment. And I'm quite sure at different levels and different types of products would have more sophisticated repair manuals because the people doing the maintenance were highly trained for that style of maintenance. And they just needed to know enough details for this particular piece of equipment. But overall, it kind of worked. The system was maintained by the appropriate person at the right time. I think I could have been better trained in identifying more major problems, but the maintenance sergeant would often ask, so how's it running? Do you notice any sounds, or is it any behavior that you're not sure of? Is there anything wrong with that? And with experience, and even with my own vehicle today, when something doesn't feel right or sound right, it usually is an early symptom that something's wrong, even though I may not be able to do anything about it myself. But I think that's all part of the overall process. So in your organization, if you're dealing with repairable systems, who exactly is doing the repair instructions? Is it somebody that understands the people that will be actually doing or interpreting and reading those instructions and trying to execute those repairs? In the next section, we'll take a look at another element of the planning, which is called system effectiveness.